It's time now for our monthly soundbite segment, produced in partnership with Sauce Magazine. Executive editor LaGaya Figueres takes a closer look at the face of the modern butcher. Hi, LaGaya. How are you?
Hello, Steve. Good. Thank you.
And before we get to that, first of all, I just want to say that I understand that St. Louis Mayor Slay gave Sauce Magazine a shout-out.
We have a special proclamation this month from the mayor. He has proclaimed October to be Sauce Magazine Month. October marks an anniversary month for us, and this one marks our 14th year in print. So whereas Sauce is great, he says, in a few words.
Well, congratulations.
So thank you, Mayor Slay, yes.
We've enjoyed our relationship the last, how long has it been, 4 years, 5 years?
I think 4 years
something
now
like
at
that.
Least, yes.
Well, let's get down to meat.
Okay, let's talk meat.
I have to be honest. Speaking for myself, I don't eat a lot of meat. I'll pick up a filet mignon from my local supermarket once in a while. I don't think I've been in a quote-unquote butcher shop since I was a kid. I thought maybe they were a thing of the past, but no.
Butcher shops are not a thing of the past, and at Sauce, we are frequently in touch with butcher shops, and they have so much knowledge. But they are changing, I think, and some of the people that we brought here today on the show, you're going to have it's new, it's different, and it's something like you haven't seen in a very long time.
Well, in a nutshell, just from you, before we get to the rest of this, how is a traditional butcher shop different from what I experience at my local supermarket?
At your local supermarket. Okay, so at the butcher shop, they might be getting in, you know, whole animal and breaking it down. At the butcher shop, what you're seeing is already packaged.
At the
grocery store, you're seeing the styrofoam in the bottom, and it's just all wrapped up, nicely tidied, packaged, ready to go. Frequently, you're thinking primal cuts, right? Some just let me get my tenderloin, let me get my this. Maybe you're not thinking, oh, let me pick up some lard, let me get some leaf lard.
You're right. I never thought that.
Right. Maybe you're not thinking, let me get, you know, some ham hocks, let me get oxtail.
Right.
Some people do, but a lot of people either don't know what it is or they certainly don't know how to prepare it.
Well, joining us now are two gentlemen who decided to abandon their restaurant careers to become butchers. Andrew Jenrich is the head butcher at Butchery, and Chris Ballard is the operator and butcher at Ballard's Meat and Provisions. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And Andrew and Chris, both of these endeavors for you are rather new. Andrew, I think you're the one that's already open.
Yes.
Has been for not long, though.
6 weeks today.
6 weeks. And Chris, you're on the verge of opening?
Yes, sir. We're shooting for November, like mid-November.
Well, as a bit of a background, prior to these new endeavors that you have, what have you been doing, say, for the last 5 or 10 years professionally? Andrew?
I've been down here for 4 years now. I moved down here from Chicago with my wife, who's from here. And for the last 3 years, I was the chef de cuisine at Farmhouse Restaurant over in Lindenwood Park.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
I was the chef de cuisine at Sydney Street Cafe in Benton Park for over 10 years. And we started about 6 years ago, we started getting in whole animals and dabbling in sausage and charcuterie, and that's kind of where it started.
I don't know that term you just used.
Charcuterie? So it's basically preserving meat with salt in a nutshell.
Like they used to do.
Yeah. It can be anything from
the original way of bringing it.
From like a summer sausage to, you know, like a meatloaf is glorified charcuterie, you know, it's salt and meat and thyme. So.
You know, actually, it's interesting. When we take a look at these gentlemen right here, who I will add, both of them were members of Class Ones to Watch, which for Sauce, it's kind of our up-and-comers, and to see what you guys are doing and taking a step forward with your careers, it's exciting. But 4 years ago, I did a piece on charcuterie in Sauce Magazine, and it was regarding a workshop that happened over a weekend where they brought in a master chef and from the CIA, and he's a charcutier extraordinaire. His name is Fritz Sonnenschmidt. But what was curious is there were at least 24 chefs in that room, and everyone was there learning specifically how to break down a particular type of pig. It's called a mangalista, but at the same time, you guys were grappling with a whole lot of different things to deal with charcuterie. And at the time, a lot of it was about, let's learn. We all need to be learning as a community. And so when I see these gentlemen before me now who were part of that, opening up, you know, these shops. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's come full circle. I think it's really cool to see as well.
I'm curious why you guys decided to go in that direction. Don't people eat less meat than they used to, or is that just what maybe some health professionals want us to believe?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think the just with the direction that food is going, a butcher shop, a local butcher shop, just makes sense. You know, I mean, with like Lagaya was saying, like differences between your grocery store and your local butcher is it's a much more personal experience. You know, you're going to know your butcher. You're going to know exactly where this cow came from, you know, when it was processed. And you get much more variety in cuts. You know, I mean, everybody's used to your ribeyes and your strips and your tenderloins, but there's so much other great cuts of meat in the cow, and so it's our part as a butcher to educate people on what to do with the rest of the animal.
So there's a real relationship there. Andrew, you say something about, like, when I go buy a piece of meat, I don't talk to anybody. I just pick it up. There it is, like Lagaya said, in the little prepackage. But if I came into your place, I might have questions for you, I guess.
No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I talk to customers about when they come in is I kind of ask them, like, what's the method to the madness that they're getting into tonight? Are you cooking tonight? Are you cooking tomorrow? Are you cooking outside? Are you cooking inside? You know, and when you kind of get just a few general questions, you can hopefully, you know, maybe either guide them to something that they didn't, that was unfamiliar to them, that they didn't know they wanted, or guide them in a better direction. Like, they're used to cooking this piece of meat in this manner. Well, you know, no one's ever told them because they're going to the supermarket where there's no very little, I should say, education, you know, behind the counter. And, you know, we can guide them, you know, to a better experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't have this, what you're looking for, but I have this, and you can cook it the same way, and it's a great piece of meat. You know, and it might even be a, you know, more economical cut, too.
Well, Lagaya, what's the benefit of that? Does that just make me feel better because I know what I'm buying, or am I getting better meat, better taste?
I think you're getting all of that. I mean, in these two instances, we know that they're sourcing from farmers that they work with directly. They know exactly what's happening at those locations. We know that those farms are either regional or, you know, in very local. And so that travel distance is short. It's cutting on, you know, down on that. So that's awfully sustainable. And yeah, when you're getting it fresher, it's going to taste better. So.
Well, are there some things specifically that you do or you offer or you plan to offer at your places as far as meat goes? And you did bring some examples from your shop, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I brought a few things from the shop, a few meat in tubular form to the show today. But, you know, I think what's, you know, been cool, at least at our place, has been, you know, when somebody comes in and you know, and they get excited about something different and they get excited about something new. And a lot of times, like you're saying, it's more economical. You know, when I can, you know, show somebody the education behind like buying a Delmonico steak instead of a ribeye where it's half the price, you know, but it eats exactly the same, or buying, you know, getting somebody to buy, you know, a Denver steak and it's as tender and maybe the most flavorful cut on the animal, and it's half the price of like, you know, a ribeye, which everyone, you know, sort of is king, if you will.
Chris, let's start with you. Pick out something that you brought. Tell me what it is, and let's try it. And then, Andrew, you do the same.
So I brought a few things. Brisola, some andouille, some porchetta di testa, and some pork rinds.
What would you like me to try there?
Try the brisola first. And brisola is basically, it's a whole muscle cure. It's the eye round of a cow in the hindquarter.
It reminds me of prosciutto. Would you compare it to that?
Yeah, it's similar, but this is beef. Prosciutto's pork. So this has just been cured with a little bit of red wine and garlic and juniper, and dry it out a little bit in a curing chamber, and then
that's really good.
Thin.
That's good.
I think we have to. One of the things to appreciate about charcuterie and these cured products, they can take a long time to cure. So it's not as if Chris could have done this yesterday. They're sitting there hanging for weeks or months. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
So,
Andrew,
that's a lot of pig escrow.
Andrew, pick out something for me to try.
Sure.
And tell us what it is.
This is just a little bit of deli ham that we do at the shop. And so it's cured in smoked ham.
So what's the kind of, just briefly, you're sort of picking out these animals yourself, right? Or at least picking out the farmers that are going to provide the animals to you. So what's involved with that? I mean, do you interview a farmer, and what do you want to know?
I mean, it's a lot of meet and greet, you know what I mean?
Meet and greet. Is that a pun?
checking out the place and the establishment,
Yeah, we want to know how the animals are raised, what they're fed, how they're handled up until slaughter, where they're slaughtered. That's a really important part of the whole equation is how they're processed, because you can spend all this time and energy and love and effort into raising this beautiful animal, and then if you take it to the wrong place to have it slaughtered.
Okay, I got a couple of quick questions though. What's that old adage about, like, if you like sausage, you don't want to see it made? You've heard that. That's my version of it. So when you're actually breaking down an animal like you guys do, does that affect the way you see the final product?
No.
Do you know what I'm asking?
I think it doesn't affect the way I see the product. I think
it gives me more respect for
exactly.
it. Exactly.
Really? Your connection is deeper.
It makes you want to find a use for every single last bit of it, from the tail to the snout. I mean, and there is. That's a beautiful part about using whole animals. Everything's usable. So I have much more respect for seeing in its whole form before I turn it into tasty.
Also, here's another thing, like truffles. Truffles have been around a while. It's got a great reputation. Why a butchery? Why not a bakery? Wouldn't that be more trendy?
I don't know. The guys came up with the project about a couple months, I think, or a year at the most, probably, before I came on board. Mm-hmm. So they kind of had this concept before I ever came into the picture. So, I think they saw something that was needed in the community or in the marketplace.
Uh-huh. And Chris, what about Maplewood? Why did you choose Maplewood?
Maplewood's a great place. My wife and I moved to Maplewood with the intentions of opening a business. Maplewood's very supportive of small businesses like mine. And there's a lot of other businesses that I think will have great synergy with us. You don't have to go very far to get what you need in Maplewood.
One final question for all three of you. I said I'm not a big meat eater, but I do like a filet mignon, and I like prime rib. What about you? What's your favorite cut of meat, Andrew?
It changes all the time because I find something new that I enjoy. It's like asking me what my favorite Grateful Dead song is. It's like rotating. So at the moment,
what'd you have last night?
At the moment, my favorite steak is Denver steak, probably.
And how's that? What would you compare that to?
Flatiron steak.
What would you compare that to? That's fine, Andrew. Chris? What about you?
That's a tough one too. I mean, if you're talking about cow, anything off like the belly area of skirt or flat meat or flank steak are all okay. Really delicious economical cuts.
Less a cut than a specific product, and it would have to be what we call jamón ibérico de serrano, which is the serrano, the pig that's been fed on acorns. Just one tiny sliver of it is divine.
That's Lagaya Figueres, executive editor of Sauce Magazine. We've also been talking with Chris Ballard of Ballard's Meat and Provisions in Maplewood, and to Andrew Jenrich of the new butchery, which is part of Truffles Restaurant in Ladue. Thank you, gentlemen, for both being here.
Thanks
a lot. Nice to meet you. Right. And Lagaya, in 1 second before we go, something coming up, something a regular thing Sauce Magazine does, the Harvest Festival this weekend.
The Harvest Festival is this weekend. It's on this Sunday, October 19th. It's from 11 to 5, and it is at Lawmeyer Sculpture Park in Sunset Hills. All the information's on saucemagazine.com.
And go to our website, stlpublicradio.org, the cityscape page. Thanks again, everyone.
Thank you.
And now commentator Nancy Kranzberg shares these thoughts on St. Louis as a great jazz city.
The recent reopening of Jazz at the Bistro, now known as the Harold and Dorothy Stewart Center for Jazz, has made me think of what a great jazz city St. Louis is. According to Jazz St. Louis's executive director, Gene Dobbs Bradford, St. Louis is known around the country as the center for jazz from the Gaslight Square days until now, and the new Stewart Center has made the new Jazz Center a real game changer for jazz and the community. Olivia Laz Gonzalez, director of the Sheldon Art Galleries, talks of the jazz galleries at the Sheldon, which were founded in 1998, having had such important exhibitions as Dennis Owsley's City of Gabriels, The History of Jazz in St. Louis, 1895 to 1973, Ralston Crawford and Jazz, and a gallery-wide exhibition on Josephine Baker. The Sheldon Art Galleries has also featured photographs and artworks by nationally known artists influenced by or performing jazz music such as Larry Fink, Herman Leonard, and Lee Friedlander, and has also featured such local artists and photographers as Stan Strumbecki, Lou Bope, and Dennis Owsley. And not only is Dennis Owsley a photographer, he has since 1959 been an avid jazz record collector and scholar of the music and taught at the University of Missouri St. Louis for years, and has a radio career on 90.7 with his show Jazz Unlimited, which is a favorite of many. In Owsley's book, City of Gabriels, he says St. Louis area trumpeters from Charles Kreeth to Miles Davis and Lester Bowie changed the way we think about music. Davis changed the course of jazz four times during his career, while Bowie was part of an avant-garde movement in the Midwest that challenged the way jazz has been played. Professor Gerald Early of Washington University is an American cultural critic and has written much about jazz. He was actually an advisor to Ken Burns, who wrote a famous documentary on jazz. Early says, when they study our civilization 2,000 years from now, there will only be three things that Americans will be known for: the Constitution, baseball, and jazz music. They're the three most beautiful things Americans have ever created. And we're leading the pack in jazz education and performance of our young folks with Philip Dunlap of Jazz St. Louis's Jazz U and the Jazz St. Louis All-Stars Group, and Jim Widener of the University of Missouri St. Louis and his yearly Greater St. Louis Jazz Festival is well known throughout the country for his big band jazz camps. Widener is a professor at UMSL and the director and founder of the St. Louis Jazz Orchestra. The University City High School Jazz Band has produced such greats as Peter Martin on piano, Neil Kane on bass, and, of course, Jeremy Davenport on trumpet and vocals. And the East St. Louis Jazz Band is nationally known. We all know of Miles Davis, and we're still going strong right here in town with Jeannie Trevor, who has been a star since the Gaslight Square days, and St. Louis's native and Jazz Hall of Fame inductee Clark Terry. His career spans more than 60 years, and according to HEC Magazine, Terry holds the record as the most recorded trumpet player ever. These are just two of St. Louis's shining jazz stars. And speaking of HEC, don't forget to tune in to Don Wolf's I Love Jazz program on that station. We really are a jazzy jazz town. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. Next week on Cityscape, we're going to talk with Broadway star Karen Mason about her appearance in the St. Louis Cabaret Series. And join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he'll talk with Jeffrey Copeland about his new book on the life of abolitionist John Fairfield, who used both force and disguises to help slaves to their freedom in the decade before the Civil War. He'll also check in with St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra about an effort to verify that Brooklyn, Illinois, once housed a freedom village run by former slave Patricia Baltimore. Archived versions of past Cityscape programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Erica Smith, Aaron Dorr, and Emma Brown. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Thanks for listening.